Hi. Anyone else online?
Hi, this is Paulette.
Paulette, hi. It's Lisa from New York, and unfortunately I haven't been able to be on live because I had some conflicts. So this is unfortunately my first night on, but I'm looking forward to it. What type of practice do you have, Paulette?
Well, I haven't started a practice yet, but I'm starting a wellness practice working with people with chronic pain and illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in response to, basically I work with a lot of pain management doctors and the recent change in opiates distribution as far as them needing to. And these doctors just don't know what to do. It's like, they need to tell these patients to change, and patients are like, what do you mean? So
I had
mentioned to my doctor, I said, you know, what is needed is life coach for these type of people. I said, you know, I've been thinking about that. And he just said, you'd be awesome. He goes, when can I start referring people to you? And I'm like, oh, whoa.
Oh, dear. Let me get a little education here. Are you a nurse or a social worker or just been in the field for a long time?
I've been a patient for many, many, many years, and
Welcome. I hope you're all doing great. I wanted to begin.
Yes.
I appreciate how much some of you have sent questions and comments about the seminars, especially those first couple of questions. I want to address a cluster of those two questions about what's the most important thing I want to ask and what I'd like to walk away with. This one, one of the best seminars. There have been some comments around how you began with a client, what questions you should ask of the client prior to the first session, or when do you present the wellness story. Although we're not talking really... could I get a management of the background noise? Mute star 6, please. I can go on lecture mode, but I like to keep this open for discussion. If we can, in any kind of noise, ambient noise whatsoever, even shuffling a paper will be picked up. So if you would manage that, I'd like to keep a discussion mode at the beginning and the end. You know, we don't really have time to discuss marketing and other aspects, but I wanted to comment that what we're talking about here, the concept of integrating psychology and neuroscience with principles of healthcare and strategic coaching, are really about your understanding of a way to listen to a story and to help you make sense of it, the roadmap system. It's a proven system of deconstructing a story, of looking at the elements that go into it to then reconstruct a new one. So the 7 steps have to do with really a way of listening to a story. Ideally, I think you'll find it most applicable and beneficial if you use it to understand your own story, then you'll be in a better position to use it to help your clients discuss that. And I know we're only looking at aspects that apply and integrate it during these seminars, and that's why you have the workbook to look at the exercises and the work tools to do that, to see what's useful to you. So that is something that I believe is not something just to do with a client, but it's simply a benefit to you to listen to a story and have a way of understanding it. So it's not something you really present, but something you use as a tool, as a listening paradigm, if that makes sense. So
yes, it does.
Okay, great. Here's something I'd like you to do, just as a brief exercise. Draw a circle on your paper. Take a whole sheet of paper and draw a circle. Inside that circle, I'd like you to place a stick figure. That stick figure is your client. Now, for your client to listen to you, you're going to have to get inside that circle. That's the challenge, to get inside the circle. Outside the circle, client won't listen to you. Inside the circle, the client will listen to you. How do you do that? The very best way is to resonate with a client's challenge and experience. So what you want to have in mind, the first question is, what is the primary challenge that this client has? What can this client not do or be himself or herself that I needed and that someone would pay me money to help that person do? So what you want to do is take it from the perspective of the client. What is the primary challenge the client's having? What is the experience of that client? Remember, we talked about state always comes first before story and strategy. So an empathic resonance with the experience of the client, including the challenge, will be the best way to establish a common ground so that you and the client can then move forward together. And the same thing would be true if you were interacting with an organization. What is the primary challenge of that organization that you need to address, that the organization needs, that you're going to be able to provide? I'm about to do a presentation to the New England ICF in Boston on April 7th. It was the first question that I requested the group leadership take to the group who I'd be doing the day-long workshop with, to ask them, what is the primary challenge in the area of optimizing performance and pressure management tools, stress management, that they are struggling with and would like addressed? That helped me get in the ballpark of their needs. The two questions, what's the most important question you'd like to ask? What would you like to walk away? That circumscribed the areas of what you are each wanting to address by attending this seminar series. So think about doing something like that with your client, because the client is not interested in your degrees or experience or training or anything else that has to do with you. They don't care, and they shouldn't. They're interested in what you can do for them, and that's all they're interested in. That's all they should be interested in. Think about when you go to any other professional, a financial professional, a doc, an attorney. You don't need to look at that person's CV and look at how many clients or how many patients they've done what with. You want to know if they can be of help to you and the confidence that that person has that he or she can be of help to you. So that would be a beginning, I think, of a way to think about engaging a client. Now, I want to open it. Any other comments or questions or reflections that any of you have before we move into our material today?
Will you be reviewing or going over the...
Can you get a little closer to your microphone? It's a little mushy.
Certainly. It's Lisa from New York. Will you be going over the neural conditioning list that you sent out? Is that part of tonight?
I plan to. Absolutely. I think that's a central piece, a central tool that I think you'll find immensely useful. So, yes. And I'll go through it by walking you through the process of how I developed it, so you'll get an appreciation of its application in an even better way.
Okay. So save all questions for later, right?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I better answer them. If I'm going to be of any use to you,
yeah.
I better answer them before you ask them. Okay.
Right. Right.
Thank you, Lisa.
Any other comments or questions? Yeah, hi, it's Miriam from New York. How are
you?
Hey,
welcome.
Thank you. I was just wondering how this is specifically for health and wellness, because it sounds like it's, you know, from my experience, I've been doing coaching, I've been coaching 11 years, and this is really very specific to any type of challenge a person is having or an organization is having. And I'm just wondering, how we make this specific, or if there is anything more specific for well health and wellness.
Well, I think you're very right. The roadmap system is basic to understanding and revising any story, whether that's a wellness story, a money story, a relationship story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you're very right. The application to wellness is to incorporate some of the tools and methods and principles that you know will have an application to wellness, and to use it in that way so that you have a conduit to the groups or the people who you want to do and can specialize in any way that you want. But these are the fundamental principles, the psychology, the neuroscience applied to healthcare principles, applied to strategic coaching. So absolutely,
mm-hmm.
this is generalizable.
All right. Also, thank you. I just want to know, was there an email sent out before this class? Because I didn't get it, if there was. Was there an email sent out?
I sent out an email with the single-page neural conditioning chart.
I didn't get that.
I'll go over that so that you won't miss anything, but then I'll be sure and check. Would you send me an email so I can fire one at
yes.
you later to see
yes.
why it's not in my system?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Well, let me move into our material, and then I want to preserve some time at the end for discussion. Okay, we've talked about the first four steps of the roadmap system. Recognize authorship of your wellness story, own your story, assess the plot and storylines, decide what to change. What we're going to be talking about now is step five, map wellness strategies. Now, as we discuss how to map or program changes, I want to refer specifically to two workbook exercises. 14 steps to edit your story, page 2.12, and 5 steps to revise a storyline, page 2.14. That will sort of break down the process of going about this in an even more specific way. Insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something that they're struggling with? They're experts on diet or weight or nutrition, yet they haven't changed. Many years ago, I treated severe anorexics in a hospital setting. They each knew more about food and nutrition than my entire multi-specialty treatment team of experts and me. Underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined ones. A coaching approach, though, is to use causes, feelings, and history as information. At times, simply doing what is currently effective dissolves barriers. In other words, as coaches, we focus on the choice architecture of the present moment, at looking at now and next. What's the next best action? And people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices. For decisions that are difficult or rare, ones for which they may not get feedback, when they have trouble translating it into understandable terms, or when they persist in re-entering an old story which etches it in their brain further each time. So, I see 6 crucial elements to map change. When you understand and incorporate each of these 6, you have the outline to master your life story of wellness. 1, regulate states of mind. This is, I believe, the essential, the most important success management of anything that we do as coaches. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and then how we process information and how we respond. We each have a number of sets of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention, confidence. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing versus editing, 2 different parts of the brain, two different states of mind. Brainstorming versus completing a project, the same. When someone's in an emotional state, they're marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain can even hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So let's look first at how to regulate states of mind. The most important thing we can do to achieve success is to manage our emotions and regulate our states of mind. Think about this. What do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the critical success strategy of managing their states of mind. Using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and attempt to manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you choose, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. Think about how you have a nice dinner, you're relaxing, having a drink after dinner, you hear with your partner, you hear a noise in the backyard. You know, you may not even notice it, but if you do notice it, you've sort of dismissed it. Now, next evening, you're home alone. You've just finished the last episode of Criminal Minds. It's Wednesday evening. Don't ask me how I know that. You hear the same noise in the backyard, and you're alert. You need to check it out. Same stimulus, but the state of mind determines the meaning that we attach to something. The meaning we attach determines our behavior. So by changing a state of mind, we change a behavior. There are two primary ways to regulate our state of mind, physiology and focus. Physiology is how we use our body to change our mind. For example, relaxation, deep breathing, meditation. Focus is what and how you focus on. We know from quantum physics and brain science, you get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns the energy field of your mind and brain. What you focus on, what you pay attention to, determines your state of mind. And the state of mind determines the meaning you attach to something. The meaning you attach determines your behavior. So your power is what you focus on. So what we want to think about is how we determine that focus. Your brain follows your focus, whether that's positive or negative. So if we ask questions that habitually empower us, instead of why am I overweight, to what can I do today to begin better nutrition and physical shape? Asking effective questions determines your state of mind. This is your power of focus. Ask habitual questions that empower you. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to get us to our own resources. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David asked a simple question. If he's that big, how could I miss? Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people wanted to buy a cup of coffee or latte, but do you want a concept of community, a third place between home and work? Here's something I'm going to recommend that you do as an exercise. It's something that I did with a Vistage group, a group of CEOs where two group members were having significant distress in themselves and in their organization following a very unfortunate episode, each in their own companies. And when I asked them to do this, they found a resolution themselves in the first 3 or 4 days and in the first week in their company. So here's the exercise. And here's the principle first. Whenever you first wake up, you're always asking yourself questions. You know, what am I going to do today? What's going to happen today that's going to, you know, set me back? You're always asking questions. So program yourself to ask questions that empower empower you, that put you in a peak state. Each day, try this. Try this for a week. Each day, write 3 questions that put you in a peak state, that empower you, and put those at your bedside table. So the first thing you do in the morning, as soon as you turn on your lamp, before your feet ever hit the floor, take those 3 questions and ask them, and answer them for yourself. Remember, you're already asking questions. This just changes the focus to consistently engineer those questions that empower you. For example, what am I going to do today that will be a significant achievement? What am I going to do today that will be creative and fun? Ask powerful and empowering questions. Okay, we're going to move to the neuroconditioning chart. I want to do this as a preface because I want to present an idea of self-regulation. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Robert Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free shot percentage, lowest in their division nationwide. During practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. And a mantra is simply 3 parts, a cue, a focus, and a physiology. The cue is just a reminder to use the focus and the physiology to regulate a state of mind. So what he suggested was that as soon as they stepped to the free shot line, they bounced the ball twice, and he gave them an example of a focused phrase, relaxed and smooth, but emphasized that they do their own, and suggested that they take 1 deep breath of relaxation and breathe out any tension before each shot, 2 dribbles, the focus phrase, and the physiology. In 2 years, his team was ranked number 1 in their division nationwide. So again, 3 parts to a mantra, a cue, and this can be simply a personal gesture, anything that brings to mind what you want to do. I recently worked with a woman in London, and she recognized how much of the time she was disconnected from herself. She decided to use a cue of touching a medallion that she wore. What I use, like before a keynote address, is I put together my index finger and thumb together on both hands to form 2 little circles, touch them in the middle to form an infinity sign. At the same time, I'm saying a focus phrase, relaxed and powerful, and taking 2 deep breaths in and out. So in a matter of 5 to 6 seconds, I'm in an optimal zone to do a keynote. Mantras can be used in various situations to regulate states of mind, especially for emotional triggers that can instantly change a state of mind. I work with pro athletes and actors, and they use it to get grounded and centered for their performance. So what I want to do now is to move to the neuroconditioning chart. And let's do this for those of you who didn't receive one. What I'd like you to do is to take a sheet of paper and simply draw 4 columns. 3 vertical lines so that you have 4 columns. Title the first column, Emotional Trigger. Title the second column, Usual Response or Behavior. Title the third column, Mantra. And remember, a mantra is a cue, a focus, and a physiology. And the fourth column is an ideal response or behavior. Now, I initially created this neuroconditioning chart to help an executive woman, very successful in her professional and personal life, with one exception. When she went home to visit her family of origin once a year, she would routinely do okay for several hours, maybe the better half of a day, but then her resilience and resolve would wear down, and as she said, she would just lose it. She would get in arguments and angry exchange with parents, with her brother and her sister. I asked her, what's the age of those conversations? she immediately knew what I was talking about. It's like I'm a teenager again, like I'm 13 and 14. I instantly feel and act like I'm 13. We discussed what emotional triggers she was aware of. She mentioned several, the way her dad would roll his eyes at her, an annoying phrase her mom would use, teasing by her brother. I recommended that she set aside perhaps 30 minutes of uninterrupted time as an appointment with herself, then to get very centered and grounded and reflect on each of the emotional triggers that she was aware of. Now, as an observer, not reentering the state of mind that each of those triggers would instantly create, because the movement from the first column, the emotional trigger, to the second column, the usual response, is instantaneous. It's a nanosecond, and it represents a state change. So the idea of the two columns is to cue her individual radar to the awareness of the already existing triggers in order to be aware of them as quickly as possible, to objectively observe, to then, instead of getting lost in that second column and being in that state for the remainder of the holiday that she was with her family, to be able to recognize it very quickly and move immediately to the third column, to regulate her state of mind, to get grounded and centered using a mantra. So I then suggested she create a second appointment with herself on a different day to work on columns 3 and 4, a mantra to get quickly grounded and centered, and an ideal response or behavior to each of the emotional triggers. Now, I indicated it wouldn't be easy and it would take repetition. She would at times have to use her mantra several times, especially in the beginning with her family, because these responses had become automatic, a default mode. They were well grooved in her brain. And she chose for her cue touching a ring. It was something she always had with her, always accessible, something she could do, just like my little index finger and thumb below the conference table or in my lap so that nobody sees it, since I don't carry a basketball. She could touch her ring and do her focus phrase and her deep breathing and immediately restore the calm, balanced, grounded experience. After the first holiday home for Thanksgiving for 4 days, she reported that it was the best holiday she had ever had with her family. Now, look again at this chart. When there is a particular emotional trigger, instead of getting lost in the content of that altered state, the usual response and usual behavior, moving immediately to getting grounded and centered and to a pre-planned ideal response. When you do that repeatedly, you're rewiring your brain. This is why it's called a neural conditioning chart. This is why it's making changes that last. When you do this repeatedly, it rewires your brain so that that cue becomes an automatic trigger for the ideal response. What you'll find when you do this repeatedly is that when you simply use your cue, you won't have to go through the focus and the physiology each time. That cue will instantly create a state of mind that you'll find will put you in an optimum grounded state to then immediately choose and to put choice back in your domain about what you do, rather than having it be an automatic reactive experience to that state change cue to go to end up marooned in that second column. So I hope that makes sense. If there are any questions about it, let's talk about it. Mantras can be used in various situations to regulate states of mind, especially for emotional triggers that can instantly change a state of mind. Mantras can both calm as well as keep you from overthinking in a high-pressure situation. And think about it for a moment. The antithesis of being marooned in your right brain because of an emotional situation is being marooned in your left brain. When you ruminate or obsess about something, it may look like concentration, but it's a negative thought loop. You keep going over and over the same thing about what you should have said, about the things that hurt you, the things you want to do that you haven't done. This is a state of mind, and the content of that state of mind, this is where people can be led astray in therapy, because looking at all of that content, working through the content, only reenters the state of mind, and it etches it further in your brain each time you enter it. This is a much more effective way to move to an optimum response that's pre-planned, because in a brainstorming session, you have created for each trigger an optimum response and have a mantra that may be the same for everyone, a mantra that helps you get grounded and centered to get there. The number two element to map changes. The power is in the focus. This is exactly what we've been talking about. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects that frequency. It's kind of like saying that all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency, out of hundreds of possibilities. If you want to change something in your life, change the frequency. Change the channel. In other words, change your thoughts. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over because it becomes a focus. Quantum mechanics offers us another understanding. The quantum Zeno, Z-E-N-O, effect says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With constant focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, the brain rewires. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus, like we do in coaching, is more effective than a problem focus, which is why we move someone immediately from a problem to look at possibilities. The brain connections literally become mind maps and then influence the reality that we see. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on possibilities, on solutions. The already existing circuitry is further etched when it's re-entered when you focus on existing problems, even ostensibly to write a better ending to an old story. This is why people get stuck in therapy. Neuroscience validates the reality that it is not understanding the source of our thoughts that is most beneficial, but a focus on the awareness of choice, the architecture of this moment. The law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If you lay a nail and a paperclip side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip. Why? Because the molecules of the nail are aligned in the same direction and creates a polarity. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going the same direction and focused, you have significant power. In the film The Secret, I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, have seen this, the adage is ask, believe, and receive. Now, I believe that's a little misleading. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It will not send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one. I can save you a little money. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. So instead of ask, believe, receive, consider this slight revision. Ask, believe, create. The ABCs. My favorite grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. She said, "Wishes don't wash dishes." The paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. your unconscious does not register positive or negative, just the focus. A print or a negative is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. The power of focus, whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. I want to get out of debt. It's a negative focus on debt. I want to lose weight. It's a negative focus on overweight. Here's one that kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray put this very simply. He said, your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. Notice which people worry about illness, which ones talk about pain or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time because that's what they focus on. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. There's a paper on my website under the Articles tab on the neuroscience of the secret that elaborates on this a little bit more in case you may be interested. So put energy into what you want, on possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. Now, quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. Einstein called it a unified field theory. Basically, he said that our mind and body are bundles of energy, and we interact with another person who is also a bundle of energy. And we interact with a group, which is a combined bundle of energy. So think about how this works. There's a very natural study. In the NBA, each team plays 42 home games, 42 away games. They play the same opponents, but they lose almost twice as many games away as they do at home. Why? There's a negative energy field of the opposing arena, a very positive energy field of the home arena. So the law of attraction is neutral, and impersonally, it works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. You keep coming back to what you want, run away from. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused attention. So the most important principle here is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. And a lot of focus is really outside awareness. So the challenge is to consciously target the specific outcomes that you want. Now, let's do an articulate your unconscious desire exercise. Do this test to see how it works. I'm going to say a statement. And for each statement, I want you to say out loud, your wish is my command. And just to be aware of what you experience. I make a statement, you say, your wish is my command, and you get a read of your experience. I'm tired. I'm late. I feel overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I'm exercising regularly. Now, two things. Be aware of if you were feeling a different energy with the first comments that were negative from the second set of comments that were positive. You create this energy, negative or positive, because this is the way your unconscious operates. This is the way your midbrain operates. Whenever you focus on something, your midbrain seeks to make it true. Your wish is my command. This is important to think about because you want to, for yourself and for your clients, create a positive focus, not avoiding something negative. So, two quotes here. One is from William James, the father of American psychology. Wisdom is learning what to overlook. And the other is from my favorite grandmother, the secret critic. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Here's a final vignette on focus. And you may have heard this story. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, false pride. The other is good. It's peace, joy, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, generosity, and compassion." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his granddad, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed." 3. Visualize changes. The prototype study that recognized the power of our mind to visualize changes, that the same thing occurs when we actually see something through our optic nerve versus when we visualize it, same brain register and same brain change. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes of practice daily. Another group, they practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws for at least 5 minutes a day for 30 days. They were retested at the end of 30 days. The first group, no practice, no improvement. Second group, actual practice, 30 minutes a day, 24% improvement. Third group, practiced by visualization only for 5 minutes, 23% improvement. And since then, these methods have been perfected, and the studies actually show that there is more improvement by visualization only, because you don't have to have a near miss and self-correct each time. Every time, it's a perfect shot, nothing but net. Every time, it's a visualization of exactly what you want. So, again, our brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as when we're actually doing something. So create a vision. Then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a visualization. So here's a visualization and focus exercise of something very common. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight. Look at those pictures daily. Write out your ideal body weight range. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body, your true body self. Now, remember, this has to be your body at ideal weight. You can't lose weight and have Alicia Keys' body. And it has to be your body in current time, not 25 years ago. Don't focus on losing weight. It's a negative focus. Don't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism or hereditary body size or slow thyroid or the, you know, large thighs of your great Aunt Sally that channel the curse. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. When you are totally present, you will never overeat again. 100% of the people I worked with who had serious eating disorder symptoms recognized that when they were 100% present for each bite, they never ate symptomatically. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. That's a responsibility. If you eat a whole piece of cheesecake, visualize that sucker, because you're accountable for that, and soon enough, you will recognize that this isn't the whole pleasure it was cracked up to be. Think and feel as though your desire is manifest create your body as your life intentionally. And remember the ABCs, ask, believe, create. Now, the art of a vision is this. A visualization is a way to rehearse for your future. It takes both art and science to establish a vision. Now, I've included a chapter in your handout on the old art and neuroscience, the old art and new science of visualization. And it has some examples in there of how specifically to create a vision and the affirmations to further that vision. The affirmations are the story that support your vision. That's the revision of your mind software. The visualization is the rewiring of your brain. So look at the successful attainment of what you want. The key elements are repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly. To consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be metabolized as part of yourself, as part of your true identity. And be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal, because you want your vision to be of successfully attaining your goal, whatever it is. And a footnote here, write it down. Research on memory tells us a new idea or fact lasts an average of about 40 seconds in short-term memory. Then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. So visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. So you create the strategy. This is quite useful for some clients who have difficulty really looking at themselves, imagining themselves, not seeing themselves as successful as what they do, or who are afraid of success or afraid of what it may bring. So to create a vision of that success obviates that entire process, because you're creating in your brain a future memory to live into. When you repeat it a couple of times a day, the beginning and the end of the day, you've rewired your brain for that success. So it's not a matter of something to be afraid of, because it's an experience that already has been encoded. You simply have to strategize a way to get there, to have a plan to get there. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Let me give you one final example here. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he essentially was isolated, and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He broke 100 on two occasions. He had 299s. Everything else was in triple digits. To preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. He would select his favorite golf course. He got dressed each day in his mind, drove to the golf course, warmed up, stretched, took some practice swings, smelled the grass, the flowers, looked at the sky, took each stroke and walked to the ball. After he was released from his captivity, playing golf in his mind 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of the vision of mind over matters. To map changes, number 4, insight changes the brain. At the moment of insight, at an aha moment or experience, a complex set of new neural connections is created. At an aha moment, 3 parts of the brain light up on an fMRI scan. An aha activates centers in the brain to release these neurochemicals to vault someone into a state of mind that is more synthetic and integrative and creative. And think about this. When someone is given information, a directive, an order, or simple facts, nothing changes. No part of the brain lights up. Now, as important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention is what hardwires it into the brain's circuits. The regular revisit of the vision, of the focus. Number five, take action. This is from Vincent van Gogh. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silent. Take action. The world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize, all are very important. But payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. It may not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes, and produce results. Instead of ready, aim, let me be sure I got this perfect before I do anything. This is why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure out something, but struggle to make it happen. I was on a board of directors of this very group of people, all of whom had ownership in a corporation, but they were all heavily degreed, heavily cerebral, and kept talking about stuff, and it never happened. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the first semester in community college owns much of the real estate on the west side of town because he's a doer. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. And remember from our discussion before, you don't have to be motivated to do something. All you have to have is a plan and stick to it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life separates the good from the great. At 211 degrees, water is hot. One more degree and it boils. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Living Seagull. He took it to number 52. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He decided to publish it himself, sell it out of the trunk of his car. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. And finally, number six, identity transformation. We're going to talk a lot more about this. This is the P of roadmap, the seventh step of the roadmap, because this is what determines whether a change lasts or not. The most important, the most powerful force of the human psyche is for us to return to the familiar, to return to our identity, to default mode. Whenever we do something new, something that's outside our core sense of identity, it creates a dissonance, it creates a discomfort. We can't wait to get back to home base, to what we're familiar with. As soon as that happens, change is abandoned, and we return to the familiar. So this is what we do in working with clients, is to incorporate the transformation of how they see themselves, their operating model, in other words, their identity, along with the changes that they make on the surface. We're going to return to this because it's so important. A new experience or idea may need to be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The Zeno effect. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience, and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of our identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance. So this is how we can be empathically attuned and help a client reframe an experience when they try something new and it's uncomfortable or there's trepidation or anxiety. We can when they're on the right path and experience that uncertainty and anxiety, we can help them reframe it as a signpost of moving ahead, as an expectable experience of doing something new and different until they become more familiar and comfortable with it. Instead of being unintegrated or prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance, any number of dismissals. So here's a brief summary of steps 4 and 5. Decide what to change and map the changes. This is in your outline. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experience to change this wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors and not on problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying the problem won't solve it. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. Facilitate insight with your client rather than give advice or directives. It prompts the co-creation of aha experiences. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow and focus to the new idea, to possibilities, not the problems. And remember, you have every right, in my view, an obligation to interrupt a client if you feel that it will be helpful at any moment, which is why I mentioned that with every client, I request permission to interrupt in the very beginning and give them permission to interrupt me. Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than on non-performance or on obstacles, possibilities rather than problems. Focus aligns and redirects energy and efforts. So you want it to be on what is going to be most productive. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self, how your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving way. Transform your identity, your operating model, along with the changes, no longer the old story.
I mean, I would.
We just have a couple of minutes now. Questions or comments or clarification? I'd like a mute for anyone. You're on an active discussion mode now. Any comments or questions that any of you have?
Well, I will call her and.
I'm hearing you, and I'm asking for any questions on our discussion, please. Any questions or yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, it's Miriam.
Yeah.
I did just two things that I wanted to share about focus, that what you pay attention to, you see more of. So if you pay attention to problems, you'll see more problems. If you pay attention to positive things, you'll see more of those positive things. So I like to think of it in that
okay,
way. What you pay attention to, you see more of.
Go ahead, Miriam. We have a little interference here.
Okay. And also the other thing is the adage of practice makes perfect doesn't really make sense. And I like to say practice makes habit. So
right back.
Those are the two things I just wanted to share I use, and it's very helpful personally.
You're right. There is some very, very good research on purposeful practice, that if you practice doing something, you can groove a bad habit. But purposeful practice is exactly what we do as mentor coaches. There's been a number of studies of this in sports and other kinds of endeavors, but it involves really working with a mentor or someone to observe and guide optimum responses, to practice more of what's working, to self-correct, to develop a growth mindset, and to actively move ahead in positive ways. And it's the caveat to the 10,000 hours to get to expertise. It needs to be in purposeful practice to do it. But when you think about it, that's exactly what we do as mentor coaches. We're helping someone in
a wellness story. Stuck back in town.
We're out of time. I'm going to send around an email to request that.
Please.
Very aware of the open line. So thanks very much. If you have any questions or comments, send me an email or jot it down. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you. Okay, that's right. You have.
Thank you. Good night.
So I'm really sorry that. So let me call you right back. And next Monday at